Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. My name is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. There's a big difference between a solution that measures a fundraiser's performance and a solution that helps a fundraiser perform. QBAC helps fundraisers to excel at their most critical task, developing deep, meaningful relationships with donors and cultivating them into lifelong givers. Give your fundraisers a better qualified portfolio, one that considers more than just capacity and simple scoring. Your fundraisers will also get insights into the hearts, minds, and connections of their donors. Fundraisers have a tough job. Help them close bigger gifts in less time by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. Podcast listeners, the Responsive Fundraising Roadshow is finally back on the schedule. We have several dates confirmed. Since 2014, our team has been providing high-quality one-day roadshows in partnership with nonprofit leaders who want to showcase their space and provide thought-provoking and highly interactive fundraising training in their nonprofit community. Our roadshows have been described by our guest as hands down the best professional development experience that they have ever been a part of. This experience has been described as challenging assumptions with conversation-inspiring content and new ways of thinking. If you would like to register for one of the upcoming stops on the Responsive Fundraising Roadshow, just visit the link in the show notes. Hi, podcast listeners. This is part two of our conversations with the editors for the Collecting Courage, Joy, Pain, Freedom, and Love, Anti-Black Racism in the Charitable Sector. You ladies have all contributed to this, as well as a number of authors. A lot of us have been reading the book for the last couple of years, and now you're organizing you've written a curriculum, and we're organizing a conference that we're going to talk a little bit about. This is part two. So for any of my listeners, if you're interested in sort of hearing the first half of the conversation, I'd encourage you to go back and grab that, listen to that first, and then start with this one. Camilla, I thought we would start with you. We've heard Nika's story here on the podcast, some of it, parts of it. Nicole, we heard some of your poetry in the last session. Can you just start by sort of just sharing with us, what was it like for you to be 5 years in? It wasn't the story that we just start there.
Sure. First, I think it's interesting to mention how I ended up in fundraising. Mm-hmm. I always knew that I wanted to work in the nonprofit sector. It was a choice. Once I started my PhD, it was in graduate school. I knew I wanted to work with students. I think it's important for them to see what is possible. And I had worked in community colleges in the U.S., and I knew that was the place I wanted to be. And at the same time, I wanted to do something that would involve my community. And I knew I wanted to do that through the nonprofit sector. So it was a choice. But I never thought it would be fundraising. Fundraising was actually the opportunity that I had when I got to Canada. First, it was absolutely difficult to find a job because you don't have Canadian experience. I'm not going to get into the which one comes first, the chicken or the egg, because if you don't get a job, you don't get Canadian experience. And so that's enough. So there's that. And then I wasn't educated in Canada, even though my degree was from the U.S. Still, you know, Canadian experience and all that. So I ended up working in a nonprofit, but I was doing, an executive assistant. And from there, I worked with events, which I absolutely loved. I like the relationship building. I like the sponsorship part, like all of that kind of jazz. And from there, I ended up managing accounts. That's how I landed in fundraising. And I was doing really well. Again, it's all about relationship building. And I've always loved that piece. Skills, there's a lot of transferable skills. And so that's how it literally happened. Now, there were many obstacles that I didn't expect. Many in terms of recognition of your work.
Right.
Promotion. That I would say fairness into the work that you're doing. Because that's what I think it is, right? Promotion is about fairness. You're doing well. Why not? And conversations around staff. Microaggressions, things that were said, and that people don't realize that is absolutely not fine, not cool. Even the suggestion about my degree, as again, my PhD degree, I actually never used in that organization because it was some of the staff felt, I don't even know what the word to use here to describe, but they... In the team, they felt uncomfortable. And so I kind of had to wear the jacket that we talked about in the last episode, the first episode. Yeah. That's when you wear the jacket, right? Because I needed that experience. I needed that time. And so I had to do it. Something that I promised myself that I will never, ever do again in my life because I worked so hard for it. So I would never leave my credential behind ever again. And there were so many obstacles. I did think about leaving the sector a couple of times because you start thinking, is it worth it? Right. And I think that's when you have to go back to the reason why you're doing that. Even though I entered in a different angle, I always thought I was going to do like maybe programming or research because I absolutely love research. I was doing fundraising, but it's still in the nonprofit sector. It connects to my community. So I still had a purpose there. But yeah, but you get the obstacles are rough.
You describe in your book, you write much of what I had accomplished. You know, I highlight these things and much of what I had accomplished was just being diminished, discarded, and disregarded and discarded.
Yeah. I think when you are going above and beyond what is on your job description, you're doing it because you believe in what you're doing, right? I don't ask for recognition all the time. But when you are being evaluated in the same degree as everyone else, there's something off because the work that I'm doing is not the standard. It's not as everyone else. And so I think that's where you are like, okay, what about the things that I brought in? How about the extra money? That's when I felt like, well, I'm doing all of this. I am really... trying to engage new partners to create new opportunities. And those opportunities are not only benefiting the organization, they benefit the ones who actually get the programs from the organization. And that's the main reason why I do it, right? Because it's benefiting the kids, the youth, the students in the public schools where we go do the programs. It's benefiting them. But when all of that is not even taken into consideration, when there are opportunities for promotion, it makes you think twice. Or when your ideas are absolutely discarded and then someone says something very similar to what you just said, that's great. Oh, yes, maybe we should explore that. And you're literally sitting in that room and you're thinking, oh, my God, I just said that.
Well, Jason, you should know in my entire 20 plus year fundraising career, I was never promoted.
Okay, cool.
I never received one promotion. And that was not because of poor performance. That's because of documented great performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I've learned, not only throughout my career, because in school was the same thing. And I think my parents always talked to us a lot about race and the environments that we'll be and the situations we might find ourselves and being most likely the only one in the room, is that you don't have the opportunity not to do well. Because you don't get a second chance. So we always excel. We there's no room for us to be mediocre. Mm-hmm. We are excellent. And even there, like Anika said, never got a promotion. So
I want to hear you talk more about your I'm a father of teenagers, and when I read this particular site, the relationship with your family, I just want to sort of elevate this, if you don't mind. My parents knew that if they wanted to empower us, education would be the key to our freedom. And then you later say, while many of our relatives would invest in their first homes from an early age, my parents were not able to buy their own home until after the age of 45 because they chose to invest in many years of education for their children. And then you talk about, this is me reading your story and thinking about sort of my role as a father and relating to my daughters and stuff. And you say, I can see this playing out around your dinner table. You're saying that you're describing that they sat down with me and my siblings. I have a younger brother and older sister to have important conversations about race and racism on a daily basis. I've never read that anywhere else. Yeah. And I haven't worked actually with you all, but I've worked with women of color, people of color, for example. And that story there just gets at me. Talk about that some more.
Yeah, I think for my parents it was always important for them to know that we understand our background, we understand how people might treat us, but we need to understand who we are. We need to have values, and we need to, regardless of the oppression, we need to stand down, and you need to be you because you deserve it, because you're good enough, because you are a human being. Regardless of your color, we are all humans. People see us in a different way. It's important that we understand that. So the conversations at an early age was because of their choice of making sure that we will have the best education that they could give us. We studied in a private school. The education system in Brazil is quite different. And in a country where we people strongly believe that there is no racism. I mean, a couple of years ago, I would say they finally realized that, you know, a country that's been melting pot and is multicultural and everyone has an opportunity. It has never been like that. Finally, a couple of years ago, they acknowledged that, yes, there's racism in Brazil. Oh my God. Great. Oh my
goodness. Revelation.
Revelation. So we knew that we would be in places that were not created for us, and they don't expect that we'll be there. So that's why those conversations were really important. How do you conduct yourself when you're in a classroom and you hear something from another child that is, now they call it bullying, right? But that is abusive, that is done to hurt you. So how do you defend yourself? What do you do in situations like that? It's important that we keep the dialogue open. So that's why we would often have those conversations, because throughout my entire school, from first grade to graduating grade 12 here, I was the only Black girl in the classroom, as well as my brother and sister, because they chose to put it in a good school. It was a private school, expensive school, hence the reason why they were only able to afford their own place at age 45. My mom always says that, you know, each one of you was worth an apartment. So make sure that that was worth it. Because it was their choice. Going to a good school also ensures that you're going to a good college or university, which is also a path to be more successful, especially in a country where you know the opportunities for Blacks are minimal. That's why for them education was so important. Also, the only thing, and I can hear my dad saying that right now, the only thing that anyone, no one can take away from you is your intelligence, your ability to think, to decide on your own, your critical thinking. That's the only thing, like your if smartness is a word, but I don't think that's the word I'm looking for. But you know what I mean? That is the only thing no one can take away from you. They can try to do your job, or it doesn't matter. But that you have in your brain, no one can take away. And it comes through education. So that's why they were always super keen on it.
You know, you've used this quote from Viola Davis, and you reference it. This is kind of a turn in the conversation a little bit, but this is your section where you talk about the caterpillar and the butterfly. And one of the things I wanted to ask you three women was why and how much do we need? There's so much spirituality woven into the caterpillar and the butterfly is oftentimes something that we learn in the church and faith traditions and stuff. It's oftentimes a metaphor that's used in those sort of settings. And there's so many different places in here. And you even conclude, Camilla, you even conclude your section, your chapter with, it is time to claim our seat at the table or build our own table. Many places are not ready for us, but we are not waiting any longer. That to me sounds like a very courageous, confident individual saying we're going to do this, but it also sounds like a spiritual journey. It sounds like a spiritual journey to me. And maybe we're in, I don't need to keep chat. You come on.
Jason's like, help me out.
Interrupt me, stop me.
Do you see it that way? Do you see it that way, Camilla? I'd love to hear that. Do you see it as a spiritual journey, that piece there?
I'm thinking about it because I know. I want to say spirituality in my family was always very important as well, was always present. And the notion that I mentioned in the beginning about we're all human beings, we just have different colors and shapes and forms. Thank God, because imagine if we're all the same, that would be the most boring thing. It's also rooted in religion, beliefs, values, and spirituality. So, yeah, so now that you said that, Jason, is making me think like, yeah. Well,
and Nicole, you label your section, I mean, you label it, come take a walk with me. I mean, that's spiritual in and of itself. I mean, even, and the gentleman, I had to go look this up, but Stephen Grillette, because we're in Pennsylvania here where I'm at, he's a Quaker. Crystal references, several authors who've referred to spirituality, matters of spirituality as it relates. Nika, your section is, I mean, we're raising money for the church, for the rehabilitation of a church.
Well, I love the book by Bell Hooks called All About Love because for a multitude of reasons, but one of them, which I think relates to what we're talking about, she offers the definition of love by M. Scott Peck. And that definition sounds like this: the will to extend oneself for the purpose of nurturing one's own or another's spiritual growth. And I think the beautiful thing that Bell Hooks does in this book after that definition is to break down what is meant by spirituality, because when people read that, they immediately think church, faith, God, they think a whole bunch of things, but she's really talking about, or that definition is really talking about the essence of who we are, right? The purest part of who we are, and that's our spirit. And so when I hear you say, you see the threads of spirituality woven through this book, I'm not surprised, because when I think about all that Black people have survived when everything is taken from you and yet you can still persist? That says something to me about the realest part of our ancestors and who we are. And it can't help but exist, I think, in vibrant ways within us. And so when we write, no matter what we write, our spirit comes forth. That's been my experience with my family, with my friends, with my sisters here. And it's not to say that our spirituality all looks the same, but it is connected, and it is a real core part of who we are. And I love how bell hooks connects love to that. And as you know, so much of what I wrote in the book is about how love made a way for us to be here today as Black people.
But Nika, when I read this book, I feel like, help me with this. Everything that's so, you know, makes me unsettled, makes me uncomfortable, but it also makes me feel like this may be one of the first times that I've actually had a very meaningful spiritual conversation with a group of fundraisers. Because we don't talk about spirituality a whole lot. Do we?
Well, and we weren't really necessarily talking about spirituality, but we were talking about ourselves. We're talking about our lived experience, the wholeness, the whole experience of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
And that can't help but be spiritual. And so if you dare to step into that space, and come into proximity with those stories, mm-hmm. and be honest, you can't help but connect on a human level.
Mm-hmm.
If you allow yourself, to be proximate, truly, if you suspend judgment, you suspend what you think you know, and you strip it down to its barest part, and you do exactly what you just talked about, which is as a dad, thinking about the conversations you have with your daughters and then juxtaposing that with what Camila has described, because in between there is the relating. It's the stuff mm-hmm. that lets us be in community with each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Nika, your use of the word proximity, you know, reminds me of Brian Stevenson spoke at the AFP conference in 2018. And I thought
I was there.
Yes, I think you and I have talked about this because I know Brian Stevens. I know his stuff really well, and I thought I don't know how many people actually sort of got the depth of everything that he was what he was calling us to. I guess you could say, right?
Well, I can tell you, I was in tears, and all the people I was with was in tears. Yes. Anybody who was in tears got the message.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So. I feel like that's a good sort of lead in as we sort of wrap up the second half of this conversation, because I feel like in some ways you're not trying to pound anyone. You want to call us into proximity. You want to invite us into closer proximity with this upcoming event. Am I right?
100%. I mean, this event is about relating, and there's no shortcut for that. And there's no substitution for that. So we can't be transactional. We actually need to step into relationship. And to do that, there has to be choice.
Yeah. So let's spend a few more minutes, because a lot of my listeners are probably not familiar with the upcoming event. We talked about that a little bit in the first session. I want to make sure that we're going to put some information in the show notes. You all are going to be introducing a curriculum that corresponds with Collecting Courage. So can you tell us a little bit about that event, and then we'll wrap up.
The upcoming conference is called A Path to Action, and it is an invitation and an opportunity for people to come together to learn about more about the realities that are shared in Collecting Courage. But more than that, if through hearing Camila's story today, Nicole's experience in our last conversation, if they're asking themselves the question, okay, and so now what? what do I do next? What is my next step? Then this invitation is for them. It is for you. The conference is November 18th and 19th, and it is a virtual conference. And while we're at the conference, the editors will be curating the first day, the 18th, and we will be illuminating two of the modules from our curriculum, A Path to Action, Journey Towards Collecting Courage, which will launch on November 25th, the second anniversary of the book. And on the second day, our partner, Mazarine Treyes with Wild Woman Fundraising, will be exploring with some panel guests the issues of whiteness and patriarchy and how to resist both.
I have truly enjoyed this conversation. You've really, as I said in the previous session, you've provoked my thinking in more ways than one. Obviously, with the book, as I've worked through it, my conversations with Nika and Camilla and Nicole. I'm delighted that now I've had an opportunity to enjoy this hour with the two of you, and I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you for being our guest.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must-read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.